Awareness is the greatest agent for change. You're about to hear from a mindfulness and meditation coach and expert who's here to share how we can go about cultivating greater self-awareness and developing emotional fitness and resilience.
Welcome to your awakening journey. Today's destinations include higher consciousness and actualized potential. If all ascenders could now please be seated in a comfortable meditative posture, we are about to ascend. You are now arriving at your host, Brian Henry.
What is up, Ascenders? You're now listening to Awaken, a show in which we have conversations to assist you in awakening your consciousness into your highest purpose and potential. My name is Brian Henry. I'm the founder of Together We Ascend. I'm also a transformation coach and your host of the show. If this is your first time tuning in and you are someone who is on a path of spiritual and personal growth and would like to continue to receive content being created to assist you on this journey, I invite you to subscribe to the YouTube channel or the podcast wherever you're listening to this from. And if you are a returning listener, welcome back, family. If you haven't yet already, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it if you took a moment to leave us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This really helps the show in growing, getting out to more people, and supports us in continuing to be able to create this content. And lastly, don't forget to share the show with somebody that you care about to support them on their journey. In this episode, I'm speaking to Brian Coons, who is a stress, mindfulness, and meditation coach and expert. And in this conversation on the show, he shares with us some practical tools and strategies for cultivating self-awareness, which again is the precursor and agent for any change. We also get into the importance of developing what Brian calls emotional fitness and cultivating self-love, kindness, and compassion with ourselves on this journey. So if you're ready to take one step closer towards mastering mindfulness and emotional fitness, stick with us. This is Awaken with, well, Brian and Brian. Brian Coons is a stress, mindfulness, and meditation coach. He's also the host of the Rewire podcast. Brian uses his energy and influence to help business professionals manage stress, awaken self-awareness, elevate health and happiness, find deeper meaning and inner peace, create resilience, and level up. In addition to his experience studying and guiding mindfulness, Brian's toolkit entails a wide variety of meditation and breathwork modalities, such as heart coherence, subconscious re-imaging, the Wim Hof method, 5D breathwork, and breath empowerment. He's helped transform hundreds of companies and clients with his practical and experiential results-driven coaching, workshops, retreats, and now I get to have him on the show for what I'm sure is going to be a very important conversation. Brian, welcome to Awaken.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that very much. And it's always great to speak with another Brian, but you in particular. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think this actually is probably the first time I get to welcome another Brian on the show. Yeah. So here's where I want to kick things off, man. First, I want to thank you and commend you for all the amazing work that you're doing. It looks like you're hosting some beautiful retreats. You're bringing consciousness and wellness to a much needed space. And that's the corporate setting. I saw that you did a event for the leadership team and founder of Flow, the spring alkaline water company. You have your podcast. And so, yeah, you're just really embodying what I like to call a leader of this new earth. With that being said, I also know that this isn't something that you've always embodied. You've also been on your own journey of challenges and obstacles that you had to overcome. And so I always think it's powerful to start there. Start with sharing with the audience here some of what you had to go through just to really emphasize the power of the experience and the wisdom that you cultivated on this journey and how it's been able to bring you to where you are today. So where I want to kick off is, tell us about what rock bottom looked like for you.
Yeah, that's a great place to start in. And I think that, you know, the name of your podcast, like Awaken, was something that had happened for me probably like quite some time ago. So it felt like a couple of decades ago, I started to notice myself from a different perspective somewhat, but I was kind of ignoring that part of myself and that new sense of awareness that kind of developed. And I just kept playing this character that I thought I wanted to create. So it's such an interesting thing when, you know, for me, life has been about achievements, and it was about, you know, who I was becoming and how that looked on the outside to other people. And I had a successful corporate career. I've been successful as an entrepreneur, you know, lots of friends, lots of great things happening, lots of shiny objects. And to answer your question about rock bottom, I feel that it got to a point where I had created this character of Brian, this very ego-driven character of Brian, where I felt that I had all of these things that I'd wanted. And these are things that I'd been, you know, working hard for 10, 15 years. And it was feeling very, very empty. And I was feeling very disconnected. And that awareness that I mentioned initially was still there, almost haunting me, because I was starting to see little bits of truth and a little bit of those shadows that we all have within that I didn't really understand or had the tools to explore at that point. Hmm. And I think rock bottom for me was the fact that I was a very big risk taker. I had seemed to have very little regard for myself. And, you know, later I discovered self-worth issues and little Brian childhood things that I had not healed or addressed at all. And essentially I just took things too far at one point. And I was out one night. I had been drinking, which was very common at the time. And, you know, nothing against drinking, but this was just a point where I was drinking and then taking a lot of drugs as well. And there was I don't know if you've heard of GHB, but it's a liquid that's very, very potent drink that you just take a little tiny bit of and it creates this sort of effect. By accident, I grabbed one of those bottles and I drank half of that bottle, which is probably 100 times the dose you're supposed to take. And quickly felt myself falling back. And, you know, I woke up, thankfully, 3 days later in ICU, attached to all these machines. I was on life support. I was in a coma for 3 days. Right. And this happened right around the point that my first daughter was born. So it was, she was born about a month prior to that. So this was rock bottom, but also a wake-up call for me to say, hey, you know, I have to, this isn't about me anymore. This is about something greater than me. And I'll never forget returning home from the hospital and, you know, picking up this beautiful little angel that I'm so blessed to have been a part of creating and, you know, being her father and being the chaperone to her and the one meant to keep her safe and just feeling like just tremendous gratitude and, but also like so many emotions. So I think that moment of going into that darkness was the bottom for me. And from that point forward, I started to get on the right path, started to do the work and listen to that awareness that I described earlier.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that story. Before we get into where that wake up call took you, I think I just want to really paint a more vivid picture of what came before that. So, you know, you mentioned the going after achievements and creating this image of Brian and still feeling empty. I always think it's so powerful to hear a story of someone who's achieved that external form of success, that image of what so many of us consider to be successful, and yet deal with a feeling of emptiness and lack of fulfillment. So could you tell us just a little bit more about like what you learned on that journey of maybe achieving outwardly, but still somewhere inside there was some misalignment and sense of disconnection?
Yeah. And it is just what you said, misalignment. And, you know, I later discovered what alignment was. And for me, alignment used to be alignment with what my left brain wanted and getting that thing. That was the alignment. That was excluding my body, my spirit, all the other parts of me. So, you know, I think a lot of people are in that position where, you know, they create something, they have a certain image they're projecting, and they're living a life that doesn't even feel like it should be their own. And because they don't know what the alignment is. And it's interesting because when I, you know, sometimes when I talk about this or I sit with it or unpack it, which I've done for many, many years, I feel like when I was a little kid, I was in alignment and I really knew more about who I was back then. I was more in tune with my body and those feelings that come up when that intuition and that wisdom that comes up in the silence of sitting in a meditation practice or as a kid, just maybe by yourself on a swing set, cruising back and forth. And you feel when an idea comes up or something comes into your experience, whether this is in alignment with your true self, your true values and character. And I think for me, it was just about what would other people think? Would I get love and validation from other people by doing all these things? Because really, it wasn't necessarily making me happy. It made me happy thinking that I was being accepted or loved or validated for creating those things. Now, nothing away from abundance. My goodness, like to be able to, you know, to travel and to have new experiences and all these wonderful things is great, even though I forget most of them. It's interesting when you just have that greater awareness and then you begin to notice that when I felt later, I felt whole and I felt connected to myself again and I felt like I was enough. Those things became secondary. And so I think that was more the case where I was just putting out what I thought people would want me to be or what I thought I would need to be accepted and loved by others, at the expense of my own happiness and that sort of disconnect from my own knowing.
Yeah, I think I really just want to emphasize the point that you made there, that it's not necessarily, it's not that these things and the desire for these things are even a bad thing. It's not something to shun or push away. It's not wrong to want those things. But I guess what I'm really receiving from this is to, like, where are we coming from? Are we trying to fill some sort of hole and find some sense of happiness and fulfillment in these external outcomes? Or, and it sounds like this is where your journey goes, are we coming from that place of wholeness?
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. And I mean, and you know, just the feeling of being separate as well, I think was another part of that. You know, I didn't feel like I was connected to anything really. So I needed to really create this image bigger than myself to feel that I would be accepted and be part of something greater. Because I hadn't for many, many years, as I said, since I was a child, have gone deep in within to realize that we are already connected.
So even through these experiences, again, these early stages, prior to the rock bottom point, that awareness that we are connected, that was still present. Was it playing out in the background?
You know, so it's interesting, Brian, because for me, the initial sort of door of awareness opening was like through numbers. I started seeing 11/11. This is all going all the way back to, you know, into my early 20s, like to a point where it was overwhelming. And so I was ignoring whatever that was. And I just, you know, there's a lot of different interpretations of what that means, but I just feel that there's moments of synchronicity where I would begin to feel like I was present in that moment and just to say, oh, whoa, there's something happening here. There's something beyond myself. And so, I mean, I think that I just kept ignoring it, or I just kept, you know, and interestingly, before the rock bottom point, I had spent a few years reading about enlightenment, reading about meditation, practicing it. But the problem was for me at that point is, and you know, when I work with people to this day, is this is something that you really have to become. And I really think that you just dabbling wasn't enough for me. I was able to, you know, Monday to Wednesday, I was practicing meditation, you know, Thursday to Sunday, I was like partying like a rock star. And for me, it was just my vibration would be going up and then it'd be going back down again. And it just kind of kept me stuck in that place, I think. And so, I mean, it just took me a while to really embody that awareness. I think the awareness was there, but it really has to be for me. And I really believe for most people, it has to be something that you truly commit to. Whatever, and that looks differently for everybody, but it has to be something that you say, okay, well, this is here. I've accepted this. There is something greater than just this meat sack called Brian. And I need to lean into that a little bit more with, and it, for me, it, the why of having my daughter and beginning to really commit to the practices is where things really started to change.
Yeah, I am definitely going to want to hear more about what that why ignited in you. But before that, I just want to really reiterate something that I think you're speaking to here, and it's being our best selves, not a part-time job. It's not something we just can choose to do on some days and not on others. And this tug of war, I'm going to call it, between this best version of ourselves and this lower self, let's say, while maybe it's not happening, it's not as polarized in others as it was at this point of your journey for you. I think it's still something that so many of us are still dealing with, having, it almost feels like multiple versions of ourselves all residing in the same body. And at sometimes we are embodying this best version of ourselves, and other times the lower self is taking control. So before we get into again the why and where you started to turn things around, what do you have to say to someone that finds themselves kind of bouncing back and forth between these two, to generalize, these two versions of themselves?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for a lot of people, you know, and we'll talk about the why, but that is something that's very important to anchor to something. You know, if you notice you're toggling back and forth, that means that you're aware, you're noticing now, because when you're toggling to the higher side, you're starting to notice those patterns and programs that you've been running in autopilot for so many years. You start to notice those thoughts and you can start to question, is this true? And I say, you know, Brian, you're not good enough. And I'm repeating this in a rumination. I'm not aware of it. And because of that, I'm trapped in the fear, shame, and guilt paradigm, which is that lower end of the energy spectrum. Mm-hmm. I really just think it comes down to, well, again, I think it's the why for a lot of people. But I mean, there's also the importance of really just accepting the fact that, you know, this is a journey for life, and where you are right now is not where you need to remain. And I think for a lot of people, we remain trapped in a story. So many people have a story that, oh, I am, this is me, and this is where I am. And yeah, I get angry when this happens, and I react like this under these situations, and I'm really stressed out, and I have shitty sleeps, and I can't do this. You know, they create a whole story which traps them in that paradigm. And that's the tricky part. But once you realize, you start to gain awareness with tools and practices, and then you start to accept the fact that life isn't supposed to be easy. This whole process of waking up and evolving and growing is messy. It's really, really hard. One step forward, two steps back some days, but just realizing that day by day, you know, really it's just, how do I overcome who I used to be yesterday and the parts of myself that I want to change? And the interesting thing, you know, and as you mentioned earlier, like it is work for life, but there's a certain consistency and cadence that creates a momentum. And at some point, you just keep putting in the time, you keep set protecting time for fill in the blank self-care practices. You know, mindfulness meditation became my core modality. You just put that time in, it creates a momentum. And then suddenly you get these bigger signs that come, and there's, you know, and then you're like, ah, it's like, I always liken it to people who go golfing and they have like 17 shitty holes and then they hit one perfect shot that keeps them coming back for more. Right. And that's like, this practice is that one moment where it's like, suddenly you're like, you transcend that old version of yourself for a moment, and you have an opportunity to take a little peek under the curtain into something greater, and you feel a joy and a love and a bliss that rises from within that no amount of anything on the outside could possibly create that feeling. And you're like, wow, there's so much more to this life. And it just becomes a mystical, beautiful journey.
Yeah. I think what happens for many who get to have a moment like that is when they see themselves beginning to slip into, again, let's call it the old self or old ways of being, one can get very easily tied up with self-judgment for that. Self-judgment that, hey, I was vibing so high, I was able to feel this, and now I'm feeling that. And I know for myself, but I know I'm not the only one, there's this sense of, I'm doing something wrong. I must be, if I'm no longer feeling what I once did. And so I think this message that you're sharing, that it's a journey. And yes, we want to cultivate that sense of consistency over time. But like the golfer that only hits the one perfect stroke in his 18 holes, I think as we continue to practice that number, that the amount of times we hit that perfect stroke and the level of consistency that we display just increases over time.
Absolutely. And also spending time with better golfers and people who, you know, understand the game, it really becomes very important to surround yourself with other people, like-minded people on that journey, and find coaches and mentors and gurus and whoever to help guide you along. Because, you know, when you don't hit that shot at certain games, you know, it's not the time to quit. It's the time to just sit and continue moving forward. And that's the rub. That's why a lot of people will give up and resort back to that sort of default mode.
Mm-hmm. Spend some time with some better golfers. That may very well be one of the most important things that gets said in this entire podcast. It really is. I've become to reference it and credit it as being the most important decision that we can make, who we choose to surround ourselves with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. I think I'm ready to hear the rest of the story. You got into this, things went too far. You ended up in a coma for 3 days. You woke up and it was a wake up call. What did you begin to connect to in those moments right after coming out of that coma?
I think at that point, it was the why at that point. And it was like, this is the why. It's for me being a father. If I don't hold myself in enough regard to do this work, and I don't care and about myself enough, or I'm willing to take enough risk that I put my life in jeopardy. That was fine before the daughter came along, but now I had something to say, okay, this is something greater than me, and this is something I love more than myself. And for her, I just thought, wow, imagine that. Imagine her growing up without a father. And that's the way I went out. And regardless of all the good things I've done in my life and all the good things I intended to do that never got to, imagine if it ended up there, it would have been a fucking tragedy. And I, you know, I get really emotional sometimes thinking about that possibility. And I'm just so thankful that I was given a second chance. And so at that point, that became my why. That became the reason why I started to create the shift. Now it's not, you know, this isn't just like suddenly the light switches on and Brian had a completely different life. It took time and it took the better golfer analogy. And for me, it was the Mindfulness Center under Dr. Stephane Travaux. I started to do work there. I started with what's called the mindfulness-based stress reduction program at the Mindfulness Center, not far from where I am in Oakville, Ontario. And then I stayed with him ever since and have been there ever since, part of MindSight groups and masterminds. And I think another big component as well was plant medicine. So it was about 12, 13 years ago, I did an ayahuasca ceremony. And, you know, I think like because drugs had never really worried me so much, I thought, you know, I didn't really have too much fear about doing something like that. But then I realized in that moment that awareness that I talked about earlier, it really created that clear separation. Mm-hmm. And I really embodied that feeling in that first retreat. And I just remember the amount of love and compassion I was feeling for the people in the room, for myself, that I'd been very foreign to me to have that kind of feeling. You know, so those are just a couple of the tools. But, you know, at the end of the day, Brian, it really started to come down to protecting time every single day to go within and connect with myself. And, you know, it wasn't perfect at first. You know, it took a couple of years to really get that flow. But I mean, you know, fast forward to this moment, you know, we were just talking before the podcast. I mean, you know, my day is very ritualistic now. I mean, if I'm traveling or if I'm doing things, I don't beat myself up for missing practices. But if I don't start my day tech-free with my journal, with my meditation, with my breath work, in the cold plunge, whatever it might be for me that day, the day ends up in a very different place for me. And, you know, it just creates a certain physical resilience, but I just keep getting deeper and deeper. And one of my clients this week used the analogy of peeling the onion, and, you know, it's an onion that keeps peeling and peeling. And it's a journey.
What's the intention behind your morning rituals?
That's a good question. The intention for me is just how I show up, typically on a high level. Now, it might be different day to day, but I know that the best version of myself will show up if I fill my own cup first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the put the oxygen mask on first, because after that morning is over, and, you know, and I do protect a fair amount of time for myself in the morning. You know, because when my kids wake up and, you know, when I eventually do check my email on my phone, or when that meeting starts, or I got to go out and if I'm doing something like you described earlier, like a corporate retreat or something, my intention is to show up at my very best version. And my very best version is the one that has had a good sleep, who is clear, who is vibrating on the right place, whose heart space is open. And, you know, I'm fully able to give my best to others. So that is usually my intention for that day. It's just how I feel is how I give to others. And that's sort of the center of that.
Yeah, I think drawing that connection between how we feel within ourselves and how we show up, and how those are two just interly connected things that can't be separated, is such a key piece. And it sounds like your morning practice really supports you in getting into that state to show up how you want to show up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting when you do it from the inside out. You know, it's so authentic too. You know, it just shines through. It's effortless, you know, coming back to the alignment we talked about earlier, where, you know, a lot of times, you know, in my past, I would show up and, you know, I put on the show, but it was just that. It was almost a character I was playing versus just allowing my truth to come through, because I had to take care of my own alignment and my own, I guess, opening up the heart. You know, as we practice in our little meditation earlier, as well. It's just getting that heart open, because that changes everything. You know, it's just, it's, this is an energy game with people and connecting with people. And, you know, so much is unspoken. It's just the presence.
So you find that in that, that prime state, being your authentic self comes more naturally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I'm not afraid of being myself. I think it's like when I open up, I connect to that source. I realize that when I'm out of my own way, and believe me, there's, you know, this isn't just somebody speaking like I've have it figured out. There's many days where I'm, you know, I have to overcome who I was yesterday. And it's like, that is the thing. But when I am open, when I am not afraid of what they will think, when I'm not feeling that shame or guilt or some of these things that have been programmed into me, you know, or even through my ancestors, you know, I'm open and I'm feeling healed and full. Absolutely. The best shines through, the truth comes through. And, you know, I don't worry about the judgment. I don't worry about, you know, the people, some people will judge you anyway, but you just go, you just like, you have to create your own sort of art in life, I believe. And you make it for you and hope that others will, can use it or appreciate it. But at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to look myself in the eye when I'm brushing my teeth every day. And, you know, when you're being authentic and you're not, you know, and I think that that's something you become more in tune with and you want to be in tune with over time.
Yeah. It sounds like you're pouring this energy into yourself in a way that it then goes out and starts to overflow into the world and into the lives of others. So rather than needing some sort of external validation or judgment, we start to feel that sense of fullness again from within ourselves, and just naturally just being our authentic selves is the easiest place, or the most natural expression of us, rather than trying to fit into what we feel like will allow for us to receive that love from other people.
Yeah. You know, like, and it's so interesting. Michael Singer uses the analogy of like a river that flows within us. And we have all these experiences and little traumas and things that, you know, are little guards, and they're like stones in that river. And they really affect that flow, create turbulence and create all types of different things. So, you know, the healing journey is really starting to remove those stones to allow that flow to come through us, because we all have that. It's just oftentimes we want to try to repackage it, or we want to try to fit it into a certain way so maybe that person will not be offended by what I want to say, or I won't be judged for that. So it's just, it's connecting to that consciousness that flows through all of us, that really is, you know, we're basically the TV set, you know, with this broadcast of amazing wisdom and intuition and everything that we could possibly want that comes through us. It's just, how do we continue to stay open to that and get into the flow with that? Now, it's easier said than done, but it's that's my intention with this daily practice, is to just tap into that a little more directly and allow that and trust that, versus trying to always figure it out from the left brain perspective.
Yeah. So in this context then, or this analogy, I should say, what are the stones that we are looking to remove to allow for that to flow through us more powerfully and fully?
Well, I think it's different for everybody. And, you know, we all have our things, but a lot of it comes down to childhood. For most of us, we have a lot of programming, a lot of, you know, repressed emotions. So things we just haven't uncovered yet. And so I don't think it's just one thing, it's many things. And that's the beauty of doing this work, of doing the inner work, is shining light into those shadows and loving all of those parts of yourself, you know. And that can be the tricky part, you know, instead of running away from your demons, loving them and leaning into them and learning about them. And, you know, when you have tools to just realize what these stones are, you know, you can have patience and compassion and kindness for yourself to understand that, you know, this is the human condition. This is where we're at. I'm not going to blame my parents. I'm not going to blame my community. I'm not going to blame anyone. I'm just going to look inside and say, hey, here it is. But you know, Brian, it's healing really. And before I actually really kind of went into this path, I mean, healing to me was just another broken nose or broken arm or broken leg, broken back. And, you know, I've had it all. It was a broken something, but I didn't realize that there was a different type of healing. And it was just really, you know, healing your soul, your spirit, and realizing that, wait a minute, that feeling that comes up in my body or that reaction that I say is who I am, it's just my little self, you know, that wasn't seen or heard or whatever it might be. So I think it's different for everybody, but, you know, just first of all, recognizing that, you know, we all can change. We all can tap into something greater, gets us on that path. And, you know, again, with the right guidance and a lot of patience over time, you can start to uncover some of these things and then eventually let them go.
Yeah. We mentioned it a few times of the tools and practices. I know we haven't dove in too deep, but perhaps it's time. Yeah. Would you like to walk us through your process for, and I'm sure there's probably multiple ways that you address these sort of shadows, but I'd love for you to just kind of walk us through a process of how you personally go about this inner work of healing.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I kind of came up with the thing for myself. It's not one thing, but it's all the things. Eventually that's where I'm at now, but initially it was meditation. And it was really mindfulness meditation was the modality that really just means that you spend long periods of time just sitting with your breath. There's different parts of the, you know, you can start to connect your mind to the body through a body scan. So really it was just in meditation. That's where I really started to notice my thoughts. And I started to be able to watch those thoughts kind of pass through my blue sky of awareness like clouds without attaching to them. And, you know, without getting pulled into a narrative, into a story, into a rumination, but just noticing those thoughts coming and going. That was a big one because, you know, when we're young, you know, thoughts repeated become beliefs. Beliefs are malleable, but they're very tricky to change as adults without a certain process. You know, once we've programmed that subconscious, and considering the amount of time we're in autopilot, we are just running on that same program. So shining a light of awareness into that through a meditation practice was one of the big ones. And I think that no matter who you are, I think everybody would benefit from a meditation practice. And, you know, even some of these different groups I'm involved with now, I'm involved with a very high profile longevity group, and, you know, sleep, diet, and exercise were always considered the pillars of longevity. Meditation is now one of those as well. So the benefits go beyond. Meditation was huge, but then I also started to incorporate breath work with meditation. And for a lot of people, it's a very powerful tool because it really helps resource the body into a place where you can start to segue into a deeper meditation. You know, it puts us into a safety system, and breath work also has a lot of benefits in and of itself. And then deeper breath work practices as well. You know, so working, you know, a holotropic breath work or a rebirthing breath work can literally, with the right intention and the right facilitators in a safe place, bring you back to that place where that emotion is stuck, that rock is stuck in the river, bring you back to that in a place, safe place, you know, because we don't forget necessarily the memory of what that might have been, if we do remember it at all, but the feeling we want to let go of. So you can refile that memory with an inert emotion versus the negative emotion. So next time that trigger comes up, it doesn't cripple your body or put you into depression or create a panic attack and anxiety. So those are great tools for me. There's been so many, as I mentioned, the plant medicine has been a big one as well. You know, that's something I do probably once a year. I haven't done it for the last 2 years. I feel that in my last session, I'd reached a certain point where I felt that was complete for now. We'll see what the future brings. And I just kind of listen for guidance on that. But, you know, we were also talking about cold water. Like, cold water is so interesting. You know, breath and cold, two no-cost nature's gifts that are right there. You know, the breath is the biggest lever we have on the nervous system. But the cold, I found, was very important in healing my nervous system as well. Every time you go into the cold, you know, as you know, your body goes into fight or flight. So you're creating a controlled stress response that you're overcoming with your mind and the breath. And that in and of itself, when those feelings come up, whatever that might've been for little Brian or even something maybe later in life, you know, I'm able to overcome that. I call that emotional fitness, which is like a resilience to overcome that piece, you know. And I've been writing a lot about, you know, resilience and mindfulness together, as I feel that those are two very powerful things. So I think those are the big ones, you know. And then working again, you know, as I mentioned, the people, you know, so, you know, having conversations with people like yourself, really getting into a place where you feel, you know, you can set a container where you can connect deeply with people and share and realize as well that, you know, we're all going through the same thing. And, you know, we're not alone in this journey. And I think that human connection part is a big deal. But I think those are probably my core practices. And I'll add the journaling as well, I would say, is another pillar for me. It's, you know, I use different practices. It was like Oprah Winfrey, you know, 15 years ago with her gratitude journal, you know, write down five things. And, you know, I've kind of built on that over the years, but that's a wonderful way of becoming more self-aware and bringing more clarity into your life by actually putting this stuff out on the paper and, you know, being able to see it from a different perspective versus always being in our heads, trying to fumble around, figure things out from that perspective.
Yeah, what a powerful list of tools and practices. And it's just occurring to me that, you know, if it's a long list and we're not, I don't think, saying go out and try to implement all of these new things at once. I think even just considering how powerful taking one of these things and really committing ourselves to implementing it, committing, I want to emphasize that word, how transformational that can be in developing two things, I think, two domains that I feel like you are an expert in helping address is the mindfulness piece and the emotional fitness. And I feel like maybe touching on both might be helpful here. I noticed that when you, on your Instagram, you do these cool little short, potent notes that you literally write in Apple Notes, if I'm not mistaken, and you share those. I love those, by the way. I noticed that, I think it's your folder, because I see it in the top left of those notes. It's in a folder called Mastering Mindfulness. What does it mean to master mindfulness?
Well, I think that's probably a little ambitious to say anybody can master mindfulness, but, and thank you for those notes, by the way. Those are actually things that I channel a little bit through myself. I have a process of journaling where after a meditation, I will sometimes write down a few things and then I will write the initials II, this infinite intelligence, and just set the pen on the paper and just kind of listen and see what happens. And sometimes the pen moves, sometimes it doesn't. And when it does, it's those notes that come up. Mastering Mindfulness is actually a course that I've taught to different groups, but you know, with the intention of mastering mindfulness, but mindfulness at the end of the day is just a synonym for awareness. And so it's just a way of being that allows us to be more in the present moment, moment by moment, free of judgment, more kindness, compassion, and just being here and now. And, you know, the world is so noisy, these, you know, and there's so much going on that, you know, we're so many of us are just stuck worrying about the future, or we're trapped in some sort of past emotion or feeling from something that's happened.
Yeah. There's something there that I think is so key to dive into here. If mindfulness is just simply being more aware. You mentioned kindness and compassion. Why do you think those are related?
For the self, I'll say first. And so in mindfulness, there's an acronym that's the attitude of mindfulness, and the acronym is COAL, COAL, curiosity. So it's just kind of bringing the beginner's mind back. You know, as adults, we look at something and we quickly ascertain that it's black or white, and that's just the way our brains are wired to work for efficiency. O is the openness, and that's excluding nothing from your experience. And A is the tricky one, that's accepting what it is, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, equally. But L at the end is love, self-love, which is the kindness and compassion piece. And most people are not kind to themselves in their thoughts, which are often unconscious, as I had mentioned. They're not compassionate with themselves. They beat themselves up all the time. And you then can understand why a lot of people are not kind and compassionate to others if they're not kind and compassionate to themselves first. So if you're being good to yourself and you're catching yourself in those negative thoughts and, you know, questioning if they are true, and just giving yourself some fucking grace sometimes when you do shit the bed or something happens, you know, you really just keep your kindness and compassion to yourself. When you're in that state, you are in a wonderful state of creation. You're really exuding that to others, and you're giving your best to others. And so it's an inside job, but kindness and compassion for self is so important. And, you know, again, a lot of us are programmed to not be that way to ourselves. A lot of men especially are not that way, but I would say it's universal.
Yeah. Would you say that mindfulness then creates the foundation for that self-compassion and self-love?
Yeah, because when you notice those thoughts, which, 60,000 thoughts a day, 80% of those are negative because we're wired for survival and not happiness. We're also in that 80%, we're telling ourselves we're not good enough. We're, oh, Brian, you idiot. I can't believe you did that again, and a lot of us just say, a lot of people say that externally. You probably know people like, I can't believe I'm such an idiot. I did this, and they do it all the time. Maybe it wasn't the wisest decision, whatever that might have been for yourself, but you can still be kind to yourself. Say, hey, it is what it is, man. Like, this is it. This is the human condition. So we're going to make mistakes. We're going to screw up. We're going to drop the ball, but we can do it gracefully. And so it's a practice. Hmm. It's a practice, it's a practice that literally starts to rewire the way you think, your body and your nervous system. And the more you practice it, the more it becomes part of who you are. And again, it's the inside out. And then at some point you start to notice that, you really start to see other people's pain. And you realize that when people are acting and behaving a certain way, it's hard for them to see past their own pain. And, and you create even more compassion. And, I think the world needs to really subscribe to this, to evolve out of where we're at right now. But I'm very optimistic that is happening. And, podcasts like yours and people like yourself and this community, there are people exploring this, at least opening a dialogue and sharing ideas.
Yeah, it surely is becoming more widespread, some of these messages and ideas. I actually want to go back to something you said, the example that you actually used of someone perhaps making a less than ideal decision or taking a less than ideal behavior and beating themselves up about it. I think what can happen sometimes is, or a belief that I've seen present for some, and perhaps in myself at times, is this idea that being hard on ourselves is going to in some way get us to change. What's your thoughts about using that sort of like self-reprimanding as a strategy for motivating us to change and do better next time?
Yeah. That's a great question. And, you know, because I, you know, as much as I do the inner work and these gentle practices, I'm also very physical. And, you know, I train my body very hard for, you know, certainly for someone my age, and, you know, we can really push each other. But I really, you know, I honestly really don't resonate with the negative of doing things the way things were done before, you know, where you're insulting other people, you're insulting yourself. I don't think that's required to create discipline or to, you know, achieve things or to push yourself harder beyond your limits. I just think there's another way. And yeah, I just think that's, I think that's like old software. And, you know, I just, you know, maybe some people respond well to that, but I mean, you know, there's a, it's interesting when it comes to some things, you know, there's people who really, you know, like a David Goggins, for example, who, you know, has got an incredible mindset and is an incredible athlete and overcomes diversity. And he's a Navy SEAL and he's done a lot of things. You know, he will say some pretty harsh things about himself or to others to motivate them. And maybe it works for some people. I don't know. I don't really know a definitive answer on that. I just know that I don't think that it's required to produce the results.
Yeah. And if that were true, that it wasn't required to produce the results, which I think many have proven, you're a great example of this, right? You are self-compassionate and you are doing great things. Then my question becomes, would you rather get there while being loving and kind to yourself, which will likely lead to greater joy? Or do you want to achieve while, you know, being up on yourself? To me, it's a pretty obvious choice that I want the former.
Yeah, you know what? Absolutely. And when you love yourself and you're kind to yourself, then you want to do the work for yourself. If you're aware of what the hard thing is that you need to do to create or to accomplish something. And I'm a firm believer in goals and achievements and accomplishments and creating abundance and all those things and doing hard things. It's, you know, going back to when you were talking about the intention and how I want to show, I want to feel good along the way. I don't mind suffering either. I don't mind really struggling. You know, I do long fasts, I climb mountains, I do hard things to take, which I'm like questioning my sanity at the point, but I'm not beating myself up during the process. I'm just, it's constant recalibration though. It's like, you know, there's the animal side of Brian, the old parts of Brian want to come forward and you know, really feel that harder edge comes through, but then it's a constant calibration back into that space where I'm like, okay, you know what? You're doing this. Remember your why. Remember why you're doing these things. And so, you know, the wonderful thing about this work, Brian, is, as you probably know, is that, you know, over time, when you do these practices, these things start to become a part of who you are, you know, and so it's just nice to just have that default now to come back to where I can just say, okay, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're doing good, man. Like, you know what? We might have missed the mark on this one, but you know what? I'm grateful to be back to go after it again tomorrow. And, you know, it's just interesting. I'll share another practice kind of along that line. You know, there's a book by Dr. Benjamin Hardy called The Gap and the Gain. And, you know, there's, you know, we get caught in the gap sometimes where we're never quite at that point. And as you know, as well, when you're chasing goals and you're climbing mountains, when you get to the top, you're just getting ready for the next mountain. You're never really there. It's the journey for life. So you better find a way to enjoy it. But rather than just being trapped in the gap all of the time, sometimes, you know, by the end of the day, sometimes I just write down, well, what was the win for the day? And even if that day was just getting through the day, you know, I do that before I go to bed, and it really sort of shifts my mindset. So I'm focusing on the gain and not the gap. And so some days it's literally, it might be the most simple little thing that you can say that you pulled from that day. But the fact that I have another day tomorrow, another healthy day to be back after whatever that is, you know, I'm still in the game and I'm so grateful for that. And so, yeah, that it, when I have that knowing, it really helps me also be kinder and compassionate to myself, because I realize that, hey, maybe I fell a little short today, but I'm coming back after it tomorrow.
Mm. Just so I know, I have the concept right. The gain being how you moved forward, or the positive, the step forward, and the gap being like where maybe the shortcoming is, that a fair way of
it. The gap is in between. So, you know, the gain would be considered the win. The gap is in between. So, like, you know, if I set out today, I there's five things I want to accomplish, and I only accomplish one of them, I could really get caught up in, you know, all the things I didn't accomplish. Or if I'm working towards something greater, that's, you know, that's a 2-year project, and every single day, you know, you're not there yet. You know, if you just focus on not being there yet, mm-hmm. you're projecting a certain energy, you're creating a certain environment in your body. Mm-hmm. You could be making yourself sick through that process, you know, and down-regulating genes or epigenetics, all the things. So when you're focusing on the gain, it just means, what was the thing today? How did I win the day today? And again, sometimes it could be just as simple as, like, you know what? You're kind to yourself. You got up, you did your best, and, you know, tomorrow's another day. But just starting to program that in a little bit really starts to change the mindset and the way you perceive what is the gain. Because as I mentioned, it's a journey every day for as long as we have, but we'll never actually get there.
Two-parter then. Why, how does it benefit us to focus on the gain? And do you feel it ever serves us to focus on the gap?
Great question. You know, I think that, you know, it comes down to awareness again. So, you know, I hear a lot about self-love these days, where people will, sometimes people will just default to, oh, I love myself, all of those parts of myself. And even if you're doing something completely unsavory and you're doing something that's would be considered negative, you may be hurting people or hurting yourself. So I don't want to, you know, not address that, because I think it's important that we are real with ourselves. But so I'm taking into account that we're doing these practices of self-awareness. We're being as truthful as we can with ourselves. As I mentioned, the attitude of mindfulness, accepting the pleasant and unpleasantly equally, but noticing it all. So I don't want to exclude that. So I'm just being delusional. And honestly, negativity is not a bad thing. You know, I will have people who are, let's say, worriers, or maybe a whole lot of fear about the future, do negative visualizations where, you know, you look at all the worst case scenarios of a situation, so you can have some a picture of what that is. And you realize, hey, if all this stuff blows up, you know, I'm still going to be here. I'm still going to be okay. And it brings some sort of sense of peace in the moment. But then going back to the other part, I mean, you know, again, false positivity, you know, no, but having a strong belief in yourself and knowing if you're following the right process and having that patience that day over day, you just keep putting in the reps, that you'll get there, is the purpose of the gain. It's just to keep you motivated, keep you on track, keep you focused, because, you know, it is, life is a marathon, not a sprint. So we do need to be able to go through those days, you know, where it's not all sunshine, rainbows and lollipops. It's some tough, tough times sometimes. And, you know, we got to get up and keep moving forward, as Rocky says, you know, and it, cause life hits hard. So it's, we focus on the gain, we stay motivated, we keep our eyes on what's important. And, you know, you got to throw a dash of awareness in there too, to make sure that, we're also being real with ourselves.
Yeah. It's the positive reward cycle, right? Rewarding ourselves with this acknowledgement so that we continue to feel that motivation to move in that direction.
Yeah. Exactly.
And what to the, like the other side to it, I feel it's kind of like hovering over it a bit. It's, well, I guess I'll tie this in. You are still setting out to achieve. And it sounds like you're doing so from a completely different consciousness than when you, where you, what you once did. So perhaps a little bit of a different, but a different question, but I'll ask it. What is motivating you now?
What motivates me now is really service to others. It's, so it's not, you know, I want to provide a certain safety and lifestyle for my family. You know, there's certain things that I want to do and be and accomplish, but really it's helping more people realize that they can actually change their story, that they can feel differently. Where they are right now is not where they have to be. And not to not have to wait for something catastrophic to happen or wait till the pain is so great before they make a change, to just realize that little changes over time create something different. So I think that really for me, you know, my inspiration and motivation is helping other people, and doing what I'm doing now is the first time I've ever experienced what that feels like in my life outside of just, you know, helping friends and family with, you know, little things along the way, where I can actually start to scale this to more people. And, you know, it's not easy. It's, you know, there's a lot of people saying a lot of things out there. There's a lot of noise. You know, it's, there's certain days where, you know, self-doubt will creep in and I'm like, am I really doing the right thing? Do I really have something to say? At the end of the day, everything I'm saying and anything from, you know, to the very top people in this space, it's really all the same thing. It's just, how do we all sort of package it as in our way of mm-hmm. articulating it and sharing it? But mm-hmm. service to others has been the big thing for me. And, you know, I've heard about how fulfilling that is, and I didn't really know what that meant until I started to experience it myself.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you've been doing it in some great ways, my friend. Again, I've taken a look at some of the work that you're putting out there, and it really feels, I can really feel from you that desire to serve. For those that are looking at that and looking at others that are showing up as, again, New Earth leaders in the ways that you are, and want to attain that, or maybe not attain, but have that as a vision for themselves. How have you been able to embody this expression of yourself that is, one, inspired to serve others in the ways that you do, but then also going out and following through with that by doing so?
Sorry,
how have you been, let me, to put it very simply, how have you become this version of yourself that is serving at the level that you are?
I think it's by practicing what I say. You know, this is, you know, doing it very, very authentically. You know, I think the difference is, you know, if you've been in a lecture in university or something with a professor who is extremely intelligent, who understands a concept very, very well, and they teach it to you, versus somebody who has been through what you're going through now and is able to share something about their journey that may resonate with you. I think that's the part that matters. And it's, you know, obviously over time as well, you just learn to articulate in a better way. You become a better speaker. You learn how to communicate better with people. You learn how to read energy better. And so I just think it's really just putting in the repetition over time to help bring that message forward. And you know, I feel like I'm just getting started with this, you know. And it's funny, I'm 51 right now, and it's to be so enthusiastic about this next chapter of my life. It's interesting when I know a lot of people my age who have been, you know, who've had a great career as a builder or a number of things, who are like exiting out now, getting their place in Florida. To me, I'm just so enthusiastic about doing more of this. And you know, I've got some amazing dreams and plans ahead for it. But yeah, no, I love that question. And I just think that the most important thing is by being fully authentic, being in absolute integrity, you know, radical transparency with the good, the bad, all of the things, but truly embodying the lifestyle and the practices that I speak about and share with others.
I love that, man. I really feel the greatest gift that we truly have to offer is this embodiment of these qualities, of these traits, of this consciousness within ourselves. The information is already out there, right? It's already shared by so many people. And I don't think our gift on that deeper level isn't about necessarily passing on the information. And this is not to say that we don't do that. Of course, if that's what we're being inspired to do from that embodiment, of course, be it. Go out and share your message. But really, I feel like what is at the foundation and fundamental to serving and having the sort of impact that we seek to have is, again, practicing what you speak. And I feel others feel that from you, right? It's not your message. It's not even the retreat that gets them to feel that sense of being compelled to learn more and to attend. It's really the energy that we're putting out there that attracts others. So I'm really glad that you brought it to, again, your own process, your own work, and how that then I feel has these sort of ripple effects.
Yeah. It just feels natural that way as well. I mean, you know, I recall the first time I'd spent many years practicing and studying, and I remember the first time just speaking into a camera. You know, it doesn't feel that long ago, and just kind of modeling what other people were doing, you know, and their mannerisms and tone and behavior, you know. But eventually, you know, after you make a bunch of them and you realize that no one really, you know, sometimes the ones you think that are going to be amazing people don't pay attention to. And then all of a sudden, every so often, you just shoot something off the hip and they're like, people resonate with that. Like, okay, now I'm just going to just do it from the heart and we'll see and with no expectation of where it lands. But it's the only way, man. That's the only way.
Yeah. And you are far from the only person that has had that type of experience. I've had it, and I've heard so many people have had it. And I think what you just shared there is really the message when it comes from the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brother, I think I'm ready to, let's just see if there's one more I might want to ask. Yeah, I think I'm ready to get you into our last little segment here. It's called the Ascending Round. It's a couple quick fire questions, quick fire answers, or long answers, however long you want to speak for. I can listen to you all day. Are you ready for this last set of questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so the first one is, if you could get everybody in the world to read one book, what would it be?
Key to Yourself by Venice Bloodworth. It was written in the 50s, mid-50s, and it's probably, you know, a combination of, you know, a bit of Eckhart Tolle, some of The Secret, but it's just a wonderful way, a wonderful book of truth, very easy to read. I reread it every few years. Mentor gave it to me about 15 years ago, and I've bought so many copies to my friends. So I would recommend that one. It's just, it's such a beautiful book.
Nice. Key to Yourself.
Key to Yourself. That is Bloodworth. Yep.
Next question is, what one new perspective practice what one new perspective or practice have you been learning or integrating in these past 6 months that has had the greatest impact on you?
Last 6 months. You know what? I think it's actually the one I already described to you, which is just the bedtime journaling and taking account of what the wins were for the day, what was something that I accomplished in that day, because I think sometimes we get so caught up in, again, you know, the bigger picture that we never feel we get there. And so I just think that every single day that we get through, where we did our best, we're healthy, you know, we have an opportunity to have a sleep and do it all over again, but just sort of capturing that moment, writing something down, just do it. And, you know, your brain is just getting very close to that, you know, we're dropping down from beta, alpha, into that theta, sort of that hypnotic state right before delta sleep. So it's just a wonderful time to plant that positive seed. So that's something I've been working on myself for the last 6 months.
Yeah. I'm really glad you shared that. And it actually reminds me of a something I wanted to ask earlier. And that's why I had that moment. I'm like, I felt like there was one more question. So I'm going to just intervene into the ascending round here, break some rules.
Perfect.
So when we spoke to the focusing on the gain, like I totally see how there's value in that. Celebrate yourself, celebrate your even small and big wins, big and small wins, to keep that motivation flowing. Do you ever spend time looking at the gap? And when I say the gap, I mean the gap between where you are and where you want to be. What's your relationship with that gap?
Oh, that's interesting. I have a life planning tool that I use. And again, this was something a mentor shared, and I share with others, where I actually will, it's almost like goals, but it's across a number of different spectrums. So I take 10 of the most important things that I find to be relevant in my life. So this could be health, relationships, money, spiritual growth, whatever it might be, all those different things. And I have, you know, a number of passions and hobbies and music and things that are important to me. So all of those things. And then I review them every quarter. So this is like sort of the logical approach, where I'll actually look at things and I'll rank where I'm at. And sometimes I'll even put it into a graph. So it's kind of this is my like sort of engineering background coming to play. And then I can see very quickly from that dashboard, you know, the gaps of what's not improving, or maybe it's not relevant for me anymore. So it's just another level of awareness, but it's something that just keeps things moving forward. So, you know, not glossing over the holes in my game or what I need to do to, you know, become my best version of myself, which is, you know, alchemy every day through this work. But that process of life planning allows me to really clearly see those gaps. And it's fascinating when I share that with people. You know, I have like a very simple one-pager version of that, where they'll just do a quick sweep on that, and I'll give them my own template to look at. And they're like, whoa, like there's like, they see very, very quickly, like there's a couple of things right there that are glaring. There's your gap.
Yeah. So you're both setting goals and reviewing where you're at with them.
I do have like a, let's say, goals for the year, but they're broken into those places. And then, you know, usually around quarterly, I'll take a look at those things, make a few notes, and just kind of rank if it's moving in the right direction or not. And then, you know, oftentimes it just means that we're just taking the wrong action or the wrong approach if it's not moving. And, you know, again, it's like the marathon, not the sprint, but there has to be, you know, we can't just keep repeating the same thing, expecting different results. But, you know, so that's the kind of the concept there.
I'm so glad that we tapped into this, because I felt there was a little bit of a missing piece in that achievement puzzle, right? We spoke a lot to of course, the important conversation of the self-love and the kindness and the inner work of how we're speaking to ourselves. But to me, there was still something that I felt like was being left out in terms of how you personally go about that process of achievement.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. And you know what? I mean, accountability is so important to have, you know, it's like left to our own devices. You know, again, we can still, you know, there's the quote by Richard Feynman, the first principle is not to fool yourself, and you're the easiest person to fool. I mean, human beings have an unlimited capacity for self-deception. And so having accountability as well through a process like that, or again, your group, your people, you know, the ones that, you know, that can sort of sometimes give you a little nudge and help you with those blind spots. Sometimes when we are, you know, in potentially caught in a little bit of a delusion or illusion about something that we're doing that's not moving us in the right direction.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, let's jump back into the ascending round. I'm glad we had that little bit of a segue. My next question for you, brother, is what does it mean to ascend?
It means to evolve consciously. It means, I think from a pure energy perspective, it means just to vibrate at a higher frequency. And, you know, I know that might be probably not for your listeners, but for a lot of people, they have a hard time with the energy piece. We really get caught up in the material matter, but which is still energy. So everything is energy and information flow. The more stones we remove from the river, the more we ascend, the higher we vibrate, the more we're able to connect to that source consciousness that flows through all of us. Ascension just really just means letting go of the fear, the shame, the guilt, opening up the heart space and getting into that feeling of love, appreciation, and gratitude. And, you know, in that process, I believe that's what the definition of ascension is. It's just to rise above your old self. And, you know, and as I alluded to, it's a day to day, moment by moment process of overcoming yourself to ascend to another level. But, it's a beautiful process. But it's something that requires a lot of patience and, discipline and practice.
And you're right in thinking that our listeners are hearing this, and I'm so sure all of it's resonating for so many. I think you tied it in there already, but gonna ask it still. How do we ascend?
Yeah, again, it's not one thing, it's all the things. You know, I think it always starts with awareness. As Eckhart Tolle says, awareness is the greatest agent for change. So when we start to notice our thinking, you know, the way we're behaving, the way we're feeling, the way we act, all of those things fit together. You know, when we start to catch ourselves in those negative thoughts loops, we can start to let go of those things. We can start to let go of the old story, and we can start to change the old programming, get out of our own way, as the saying goes. And when we do that, we start to connect to that higher sense of wisdom and intuition and truth and beauty that arises. But it really comes down to the practices. And certainly for me, it's just, you know, to use the gym analogy, it's just putting in the reps every single day, you know, and some days are, you know, you get the right golf swing, you hit the perfect shot and you really, really feel it. And then other days you're out, you know, plowing the field with a lot of bad shots, and, you know, it can seem really hard, but it's, I think it's a combination of the practices, and there's a level of faith as well that comes in this work. I think you really have to just know that there's a knowing beyond what you can currently, your current version can't see that far ahead. Yeah. I think you have to have some faith that that will unfold for you with the right, over time, with the right practices.
Ryan, I have one final question for you. I always say it's my favorite one on the show. You ready for it? Oh, wait, no, before that, I would love for you to, before our grand finale, if someone was hearing this and they were interested in checking out more of your work, staying connected, perhaps getting in touch or receiving any one of your many offerings. Where would you direct them? And is there any offerings that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think, you know, my social media and my website is just my name, Brian Coons, or briankoons.com. So everything is there right now. You know, I've got a course coming out this month, which I'm really proud of, that's called Mindful Resilience. So it's mindfulness and emotional fitness. I've done a few iterations of this. This one's beautiful. It's all, you know, it's animated, it's video, it's very engaging. So I'm definitely excited about that. And, you know, I do regular retreats, and I have something called a Rewire Retreat. So the next one is on May 4th at Clear Being Retreat Center in King City. And, you know, that's become such a beautiful process. You know, as I mentioned, connecting with people, it's so nice to do that. But I now work with a number of facilitators. So it's not just the Brian Show. I bring a number of incredible healers and facilitators together in a synergistic way, and just kind of create that container for a great experience. So yeah, thank you for asking.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that. And as always, there'll be links to all of that in the show notes of the episode. And now it's time for the grand finale. Brian, you just realized the ability to telepathically communicate to all of humanity. What do you say?
I would say you're enough.
Thank you again, brother, for being the embodiment that you are, first and foremost, more important than the things that you're doing, as amazing as those are. I just want to really acknowledge the level of embodiment of kindness and consciousness that I feel from you. And of course, what that then leads into is all the amazing work that you're putting out into the world. Thank you for your service. Thank you for joining me on this episode. Whoever's listening to this, go check the man out. He's got a lot of great content online, and as he shared here before, or you just shared, there's a few offerings, including a course coming up. So keep an eye out for that. Brother, thank you again for all of this.
Yeah, thank you, Brian, and thank you for providing a space for us to have this conversation. So thank you so much.
Senders, that is going to be all for this episode with Brian and Brian. I'm not going to get tired of that. I trust that it was able to support you in mastering mindfulness and emotional fitness, because once again, awareness is the greatest agent for change. It all begins with this, and by committing ourselves to this journey of becoming more aware of ourselves and shifting, reprogramming the aspects of ourselves that isn't in alignment with our truest and highest expression. Well, this is how we embody the consciousness, the love, the kindness that we are here to as new earth leaders, which, if you're hearing this, you most certainly are. Senders, before you go, if you've enjoyed this episode, I would greatly appreciate it if you took a moment to leave us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you are either Spotify or YouTube, drop me a comment. Let me know what came up for you in this episode. I love reading the comments that come in and hearing about how it may have impacted you. And lastly, think about somebody that you care about, someone that you love, and share with them this episode to support them on their journey of mastering mindfulness and their emotional fitness too. Ascenders, that is going to be it for this episode of the Awaken Podcast. I want to thank you again for being here with me on this planet at this time in this moment of our ascension. And until next time, keep ascending.